Your financial questions answered by the best local business professionals. Only here on the Money Matters Radio Network. Call in with your questions at 888-205-2263 or send us instant feedback on moneymattersboston.com.
Hey, welcome back into the Money Matters Radio Network Afternoon Edition. June night, hanging out with you in studio. It's about 4 o'clock, I guess, on this Wednesday. 37 degrees outside. And in studio with me, my co-host this hour, filling in for Brendan King, it's Linda Camuso from Estate Preservation Law Offices out of Worcester, Braintree, Cambridge. Wow, you guys are all over the place. Cape Cod.
We are.
I know you had offices down on the Cape.
We do. And thanks for having me, June. It's great to be back.
Yeah, welcome back.
Yeah, we have our main office is out of Worcester, and I would say probably the majority of our practice is out of the Central Mass area, but we do have 3 satellite locations for meeting clients because we do really have I would say our practice really goes, you know, throughout the whole state. So particularly on the eastern side, we do have the Braintree and the Cambridge location for our clients in the Boston area and the Hyannis for our South Shore clients, just to have, you know, a lot of times we'll travel out to clients, but a lot of times clients, you know, want to be at an office. Oh, yeah. And you want to have the amenities of an office when you're doing a signing or what have you. So, yeah, it works out well.
Well, welcome back onto
Thank
the
you.
Show. I know Mr. Brendan King a little tied up this week with family because
holidays,
it's
family.
Yeah, it's vacation week for the kids.
Right, right. So yesterday he was bowling, and today he's with the 3 older kids at a movie. So good times.
Okay. We'll find out. We'll have to grill him next time he comes back
sure.
at what movie he was out there
I'm
seeing.
I'm sure he'll remember every minute of it.
Oh, wow. So studio lines are open for Linda. This will be kind of a fun hour. 888-205-2263. Because we're coming up on year end. Maybe some people sitting around the house thinking about 2011, maybe making a list of things they need to do.
That's right.
And maybe one of them is making a will.
That's right.
I almost don't even want to say the word because to some people it's like a dirty word. It's like, a will? Oh, my God, no.
It is. It is. And, you know, nowadays estate planning has evolved so far beyond just a will. You know, there's so many more complex issues that people are facing, you know, whether it be how are we going to pay for long-term care as we get older? How are we going to protect the home? You know, our daughter is autistic. How are we going to make sure that we care for her? So sort of the old-fashioned having a will is really such a small, almost outdated. You were talking about the ball dropping and how that's, you know, kind of circa 1980s, you know, old-fashioned view of New Year's. I would say similarly is the having a will sort of the outdated not outdated. I mean, a will is still an important piece of it, but there's so many more issues to contend with now just beyond who's going to get my stuff when I pass away. And what I wanted to talk about today was what happens when you pass away, you know, not obviously in the spiritual sense, but what's going to happen? What's left behind? What do my family members actually have to go through? And, you know, we do counsel clients who are serving as executors of a loved one's estate, but we also, and we'll talk about what that means in a minute. The executor is just basically the person that the court puts in charge after someone dies. But also what happens, you've got that piece of it, but what do these people actually have to deal with? And we end up in a situation where clients are sitting there. I met with a woman today who, you were doing a will and a trust. And she said, you know, what is this whole probate process like? What will my heirs actually have to go through? And she wanted to understand that because knowing what's going to happen on that side of it will help people do the proper planning, on this side of it. It's what's going to help people overcome that hurdle and actually follow through on those New Year's resolutions to put these things into place.
I'm so glad you brought this up today, Linda. I can't even tell you how many people have come to me, you know, knowing I work here at Money Matters, and they've said, we've talked about wills and planning and estate planning and all that stuff, and they've said, oh, do I need a will? Yeah, you know, maybe I'm in my 30s, maybe in my 40s. Why would I need a will? Yep. Maybe I don't have anything.
Yep.
Or I don't own anything. You know, so they think, or they think if they do a will, then they're going to die.
Right. There's definitely a lot of superstition and a big mental hurdle that people have to get over. The reality is, Brendan will tell you, any of the other attorneys or advisors you know will tell you, we never have a client who walks out of the office after finishing the process and signing and saying, I feel so bad. I feel like I'm going to go out and get hit by a truck. They feel better because, especially, you know, if they're older, if they've never done it, if they have young kids, this is the stuff that keeps people up at night. You know, you get up for that 2 a.m. trip to, you know, the bathroom when you're – these are the things that crop up into people's heads during those vulnerable moments. And honestly, everyone feels better after because it's done. You put it in a drawer. You don't have to think about it anymore. And you realize, like most things we have to go through, it wasn't that scary.
And for most of the people that tell you, well, I really don't have anything, I'm sure you go on in and find out that they do.
They do.
They're thinking that they have to own, you know, all these properties.
They're thinking they have to be Donald Trump, you know, in order to have an estate. And an estate just means whatever you have. If it's $5 in your pocket and a Discover card that's maxed out, that's your estate. And whether you die with that or with millions, the reality is someone's going to be left behind that has to deal with that. And that's what the estate process is all about. And that's what the executors have to go through. And we'll talk about that a little bit today, which will really help people understand why what they do now will make things so much easier on the other end for the people that they care about, the people that they're putting the will and all of that in place for. It's not for themselves. It's for what happens after they're gone.
Right. And if you care about these people, you know, they're your loved ones.
That's right.
You want to make it easier for them. So, okay, this is a great topic. Like I said, we're coming up on a new year. Make that list. Make those resolutions. Go on out. Get this will going. And you're here to tell us today about, you know, what happens someone passes away and whether they have a will or without a will. So where do we begin?
So, well, basically, when a person passes away, they either have a will or they don't. If they have a will, the will is going to be the guideline that we're going to start out with. Who is named as the executor? Who is taking over in, you know, paying the final bills, gathering up all the assets, filing tax returns, distributing out the assets to the beneficiaries. If there's no will, then someone has to step up into that role. And that person in that case would not be an executor, but would be called an administrator. But it's basically the same function where now that person is stepping in, but they don't have any guidelines to follow. They don't know who you wanted anything to be left to, so they have to look to the default laws of the state, which is what we call the intestacy laws. When you die without a will, that's called dying intestate. And the law will have a will set out for you. If you don't get around to doing one yourself, the law is going to say, okay, here's the people that are going to get it. If you have a spouse and kids, your spouse is going to take half, your kids are going to take half, which is surprising to a lot of people.
So it doesn't necessarily, all of your money or assets don't go back to the state.
They don't.
Okay, that's a rumor that's out there then.
They would only go to the state really if you had no next of kin or heirs at laws whatsoever. And most people have someone remotely out there, and you do hear those stories of, you know, the Mr. Deeds, you know, people hearing like, oh, you were the only heir of your uncle who lived in Alaska who you never knew. And those obviously don't happen all that much. But, you know, it's got to go somewhere. So, yeah, it's only going to go to the state if you don't have any next of kin or relatives, if you will.
Okay, you're completely alone in the world.
That's right.
Something out of the Twilight Zone.
That's right.
Okay, so I'm sure this doesn't happen that often then.
No, it really doesn't. And usually it's, you know, what's more surprising to people is to find out what the will or the intestacy statute doesn't reach. And what I mean by that is how you own your money and your assets is what's going to affect who gets them. So your will might say everything goes to my spouse, but you might have an asset that you own jointly with a child, or you might have a life insurance policy that you got 30 years ago and you never took your ex-spouse off as a beneficiary. And in those cases, those joint owners or those beneficiary designations on some of those assets are what's going to control where that goes. So irrespective of what your will says, how things are titled, who's the owner, who's the named beneficiary, that's going to control. So people are will come in and be shocked that to find out that the will might not have any say over any of the assets because they had titled things jointly or had named people as beneficiaries, and they didn't realize that they couldn't supersede that with the will. So that's why we'll sit down with people, and it's not just about, yeah, who do you want to name in your will? It's what do you have? How do you own it? Who is your beneficiary? And, you know, Brendan would love to be here to do his don't, he calls it the donut beneficiary designation, where you're sitting down your first day on the job and you're filling out all your HR paperwork and you have your 401k and you have to name, you know, who's your primary, who's your contingent beneficiary. And as you're filling that out, someone walks in behind you and says, hey, I brought in donuts. And you kind of look behind you and scratch down a name and run out the door, to grab a donut. People don't realize. And then that IRA or 401k becomes $1 million. Who did you name? Some people don't even remember. So these are things that we talk to clients about, and it's all gonna pay out someday. So Okay. Better to find out then than when you pass.
Okay, let's take a quick break. We'll be back. This is the Money Matters Radio Network.
Every day, people find even more reasons to go to Telegram.com. Telegram.com gives you local news, breaking stories, on-the-scene video, engaging photos, lively commentary.
It's my homepage, where I catch up on what's going on where I live.
I keep up with local news because it's updated all day long.
It's excellent for local sports and the latest high school football scores, and you've got to love the photos.
Every day, people find even more reasons to go to Telegram.com. It's your connection to life all around you. You can find a home, get a job, buy a car.
I love the video stories right on the homepage.
Telegram.com lets me read the news, make comments, and see what others are saying.
It's my number one source for local news and information in the area.
Every day, Telegram and Gazette award-winning reporters and photographers are out in your community to bring you news and information that's complete and trustworthy. There's always a reason to go to Telegram.com.
Yellow Book presents Quick, Make a Decision, now. We place today's contestant, Bob, a small business owner, in a leaky boat and a tank with toxic chemicals.
Yeah, I'm sinking.
Bob, what's the best way to find customers for your business? A, hand out pens with your name on it, or B, advertise in Yellow Book.
This thing is really sinking.
Then make a decision now.
Yellow Book!
Right. Yellow Book can help your customers find you online, on their mobile, or in the book. When your business needs help, Yellow Book it. To advertise, call 1-800-YB-YELLOW or visit yellowbook.com today.
Do you have questions or need help with your current or pending mortgage? Rob Gallagher of Ross Mortgage in Westboro has over 30 years of experience in the retail mortgage industry. Rob and the team at Ross Mortgage have proficient loan officers, processors, and underwriters waiting to assist you. Ross Mortgage is driven by excellence, respect, ethics, and teamwork. Contact Rob at Ross Mortgage by calling 877-811-5508 or visit them at rossmortgageco.com.
Hey, this is Dave calling in from MoneyMattersBoston.com here. Verizon and many other employers have come out with early retirement packages, and older workers have a very limited amount of time to make an informed decision. How much severance are you being offered? How does the offer affect your pension? Does the offer include health insurance? These are critical points to consider before you make a decision. Call us at 781-433-0001 and receive our free report, Evaluating an Early Retirement Offer. You should act quickly as you have to make a decision within 2 weeks of receiving your package. 781-433-0001. We can help you make an informed decision. This early retirement offer could be a great opportunity, and we can help you understand that opportunity. Call now for our free report called Evaluating an Early Retirement Offer. That's 781-433-0001. Again, 781-433-0001. Prepare yourself for this critical offer. 781-433-0001.
Keeping an eye on your wallet is what we do best, right here on the Money Matters Radio Network. Send the Money Matters team instant feedback at MoneyMattersBoston.com or call in with your questions at 888-205-2263.
.317 on the clock, and it's Money Matters Radio Network, streaming live on the web, MoneyMattersBoston.com, 888-205-2263. If you've got questions, June Knight in studio with Linda Camuso of Estate Preservation Law Offices out of Worcester, Braintree, Cambridge, and Cape Cod. Linda, today in studio, we're talking about having or not having a will. why this is so important, and, you know, just kind of breaking it down, if you will. Linda, you're breaking it down for us. I like this. And before the break, you know, you were just kind of telling us the importance of having this will and filling it out and not being superstitious and it being the right thing to do.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, as part of the process when we sit down, like I said, today I was meeting with a client and, you know, people want some type of context for, okay, I'm paying you this money to draft these documents. You know, what happens if I do it? What happens if I don't do it? And this client said to me today, well, what is the deal with probate? Why do people hate probate? And people are always saying, oh, avoid it at all costs.
Avoid probate,
yeah,
right.
Avoid probate. That's the big, that's the big buzzword out there right now. And people will, you know, you'll see, you know, certainly out our way, we, you know, you're inundated with like legal flyers in the paper for avoid probate. Don't let the probate court grab all your money. And they make it seem like it's this really mean, scary institution to be avoided at all costs. And sometimes you can't avoid it. But, you know, let's
just costly?
Talk.
Is that what?
Yeah. We'll talk for a minute about what probate means and what it doesn't mean. Like I had said before, when a person dies, probate court comes into play when we have assets that the person owned in their own name without a joint owner. So obviously, if my husband and I own our house jointly, that's not a probate asset. But if I have a $25,000 bank account that has just my name on it, that is a probate asset. So even though I have named my husband in my will and said he gets everything when I die, and even though it's at the same bank that our other accounts are at, his name's not on it. So when I die, he can't get to that account. So what you need is permission from somewhere, for someone to go get that asset and give it to the person who I named in my will. And that's where probate court comes in. You name an executor in your will, and that's the person that you're putting in charge and telling to go out, get the stuff, and give it to the people that you want it to go to.
Okay.
So the executor who's named in the will and typically will hire an attorney to do this because, you know, it's not easy and it's frustrating and you kind of have to know the ropes. Each probate court in each county is different. Some of their filing requirements are different, you know, and it can be a little scary. And the probate court is also where people go for family law issues. So you'll go down there to file your probate of a will to get an executor appointed, and you've got people standing in line who are getting restraining orders and are there for divorces and custody disputes and child support disputes. And
a lot going on in that place.
Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons why probate court over the years has just become, people have become so averse to the idea of it, is because it is just a congested, you know, kind of intimidating place. But where we need the court to validate the will, because we have this document that we're saying, this was Linda's will, everyone, this, she signed it. Well, that's great, but, you know, we need someone to actually declare that my will. And that's the court's job, is to validate my will and appoint my executor. And there's a series of steps, which I won't bore you with, that you have to go through. There's some paperwork that has to get filed. The executor has to post a bond. You have to notify interested parties, which would be your heirs at law, as well as anyone else who's named in the will. And a lot of times there's a same person. And when I say heirs at law, I mean the people that we talked about with that intestacy statute. These are the people who would be inheriting your assets, but for the fact that you have a will. So those people, obviously, if it's different than who I've named in the will, if I decided to disinherit my entire family and name like a charity, those people have a right as my heirs to know what I'm doing with my assets. So they have to be notified of the existence of this will and the fact that someone is trying to become the executor. And you have to publish in the paper so you can put creditors on notice. So, you know, Discover Card will know that I'm dead so they can come knocking on the door looking to be paid back. But hopefully that balance isn't too high. But, you know, right after Christmas, you know.
Yeah.
So,
of course.
So that's the process. And then you have to wait. There's a period of time that you have to wait for people to get the notice and have a chance to come in and object. Mm-hmm. If someone who's an interested party or an heir doesn't like, you know, has any suspicion of wrongdoing, they think that maybe I was coerced, maybe someone shoved something under my nose, you know, the day before I died and just had me sign it not knowing what I was signing. This is an opportunity for anyone who has any concerns to come in and make sure that everything's legit. And then the executor gets appointed. So going back to my bank account scenario, once the executor is appointed, so let's say I had named my husband as my executor, he goes to the bank with that appointment from the court. And he presents that to the bank. And there's a series of steps that they have to go through. But basically, at that point, he's the person who has the authority now to take my money, title it in the name of my estate, and then after, you know, everything's paid and everything is settled, pay it out to the people that I had named under my will. So that's really the process. Now, obviously, the more complicated a person's situation is, maybe there's bad dynamics in the family, maybe two of the kids hate each other, maybe the parent disinherited one of the kids, and we know that kid's going to come in and try to fight the will. Those situations are part of where probate gets that bad reputation, because that's where people are going to duke it out and they're going to be going into court and getting lawyers. And obviously, the more money that's at stake, the more chances there are for, you know, conflicts to crop up. And ironically, sometimes when there is no money, you have people fighting over, like, you know, the silverware and, you know, the old, you know, record collection. I mean, it, you know, people really do.
They fight over all the little things.
They fight over the little things. And people are grieving. And you've got, you know, 25 years of these two brothers who have hated each other. And now mom's death is going to be the catalyst that's going to turn the heat up on that burner and really make that conflict come to life again. So
sometimes people hire somebody, too, to kind of sit in that house while everybody comes and takes their things.
They absolutely can. And actually, it's one of the executor's jobs. You know, the executor is this sort of like all-encompassing title, but they're really overseeing the whole thing. They're in charge, even though other people are ultimately maybe going to get the money at the end of the day. And sometimes the executor is also one of the beneficiaries of the estate, one of the kids, for example. But their job is to come in and safeguard everything. So they really have to oversee everything, make sure you don't have kids coming in the house and, you know, filling up the pickup truck with, you know, mom's antiques or what have you. So that's where I think just this process gets very kind of dramatized and hyped up. But the probate court is a very small piece of it. It can be a few thousand dollars, you know, just for a simple probate. I mean, what, you know, obviously if there's a lot of issues going on, the fees can go up. But and it can take a couple months. It can drag things out. But the probate court really is not the be-all, end-all concern. There's a lot of other issues going on when a person dies. Probate is just one of them. Obviously, if you can avoid probate, and that's where living trusts or revocable trusts come into play, where someone will set up a trust, take that bank account, instead of me owning it in my own name, now I own it as trustee of my trust, so that when I die, the trustee I've named in my document just takes over and pays it out to my husband. There's no probate court. There's no supervising body who's overseeing it. It's a private relationship between me and my trustee, and they pay the money out to my beneficiaries. So there's no reason to not avoid probate, but if you get caught in it, it's not the end of the world. Like, and from a planning perspective, there's a lot bigger things we're worried about during life that could potentially grab your assets, like creditors or, you know, the nursing home or things like that. There's a lot bigger things, bigger fish to fry, if you will, than probate court, although it certainly is not a pleasant experience. So like I said, there's no reason to, you know, not to avoid it if you can.
Right. I know, because those words kind of go together now, too. Every time we hear it, it's always avoid probate.
Yep. Avoid probate.
Because, like, it's this real nasty,
yep,
you know, bad, bad thing. And maybe it is for some people.
Yeah,
some
it certainly point. Can be, you know, and obviously when you're grieving and money's tight and you're trying to figure out how are we going to get access to mom's bank account to, you know, to pay her funeral, the last thing you want to be dealing with is a big crowded courthouse. But, you know, the other time that, or the, one of the other major, arenas of the probate court when someone dies is if that person was survived by minor children. The probate court comes into play for that, appointing the guardian and the conservator of those children. And when I was in here last month with my colleague Melissa, we talked a lot about guardianships and conservatorships, and we were primarily talking about it in the context of older people who, you know, have started to have health issues and maybe dementia and really can't handle their affairs anymore. But probate court also oversees the appointment and supervision, ongoing supervision of guardians when someone passes away with minor children, because someone has to step in now and raise that child, be responsible for the child's care and custody and overseeing the finances. Mm-hmm. And so that's a whole other piece of this process beyond the assets and the executor is that guardian and conservator piece. So what typically happens there is, again, if there's a will, if someone has minor children, part of the process is to have them select who they would name as the guardian of their kids. And I'm sure you can imagine that this is the area where people tend to struggle the most. And I really believe this is why a lot of younger, you know, parents put off doing a will, because they just can't, they either can't agree as between, you know, husband and wife, who's going to raise the kids. I want my mom. Absolutely not. I want it to be my brother. And they can't agree. So they just never get around to making a decision. Or, you know, if there is no will, then you have to have someone who's going to step up and sort of volunteer for that capacity. And usually the family will know among itself who the right person would be for that. But it's the same process as the executor. You have to go into court. You have to get that court's blessing. Just because that person's named in the will is just the first piece. You then have to have the court give that person, vest them with the authority as the guardian. And when we come back, I'll talk a little bit about what that guardian's ongoing role is in the children's lives, and how planning during life to set up a situation where maybe you use a trust in conjunction with a guardian, and how that can be just a much better situation if you should find yourself in that situation where you pass with young children.
Okay, well said. Once again, it's Linda Camuso filling in for Brendan King on this Wednesday from Estate Preservation Law Offices located in Worcester, Braintree, Cambridge, Cape Cod. The website to get in touch with her, of course, estatepreservationlaw.com. MoneyMattersBoston.com is our website. You want to see us streaming live and listen as well. And we'll be back. You're listening to the Money Matters Radio Network.
Bloomberg Business Week Update. I'm Kathleen Campion. If you run a small business, it will not surprise you to hear the recovery that began in the middle of last year hasn't reached small business yet. Data from the Bureau of Economic Analysis shows that while corporate profits approach pre-recession levels, income at small private companies is recovering much more slowly. BEA reports proprietors' income, the profit of unincorporated businesses like partnerships or individuals who work for themselves, is down nearly 5% from 2 years ago, while corporate profits are up 21%. Many big corporations are seeing strong sales from their overseas operations, while smaller companies tend to sell primarily in the U.S. Add to that, large companies have the ability to shift markets when they see demand, and large companies are more likely to be diversified, small companies less so. For more on this story, go to businessweek.com. I'm Kathleen Campion.
At USAA, we believe what customers say about their auto insurance says everything about an insurance company, and USAA members have a lot to say. Jesse writes this on USAA.com. We just saved $1,200 a year with USAA. USAA member Charles says, I've been with USAA for over 40 years. USAA is the best financial institution I've ever used. It gets top honors for customer service, and I can see why. What's it like to still be a fan of your insurance company after 40-plus years? Switch to USAA Auto Insurance and find out. Drivers who do save $450 a year on average. Our commitment to serve the financial needs of our military, veterans, and their families is without equal. If you or someone in your family has honorably served, call 1-800-227-USAA or visit usaa.com/car. Insurance provided by United Services Automobile Association and its affiliates, San Antonio, Texas. Membership eligibility restrictions apply. Savings based on 2010 countrywide survey of new customers who switched. Not applicable in Massachusetts.
Every day, people find even more reasons to go to Telegram.com. Telegram.com gives you local news, breaking stories, on-the-scene video, engaging photos, lively commentary.
It's my homepage, where I catch up on what's going on where I live.
I keep up with local news because it's updated all day long.
It's excellent for local sports and the latest high school football scores, and you've got to love the photos.
Every day, people find even more reasons to go to Telegram.com. It's your connection to life all around you. You can find a home, get a job, buy a car.
I love the video stories right on the homepage.
Telegram.com lets me read the news, make comments, and see what others are saying.
It's my number one source for local news and information in the area.
Every day, Telegram and Gazette award-winning reporters and photographers are out in your community to bring you news and information that's complete and trustworthy. There's always a reason to go to Telegram.com.
It's the Money Matters Radio Network. Call in toll-free to ask your financial questions at 888-205-2263 or log on to moneymattersboston.com.
The music's back. That means we are back on the Money Matters Radio Network. The studio lines are open as well at 888-205-2263 if you have a comment or maybe a question. For Linda Camuso from Estate Preservation Law Offices out of Worcester, Braintree, Cambridge, and the Cape. She's filling in for Brendan King today and doing a fabulous job, I must say. Do you think Brendan's at home listening? Oh, you said he's in the movies.
I don't think he is at all. Okay. He is sitting in a movie theater right now with his three little kids, probably counting the seconds. Linda.
He could be out by now, though, and maybe tuning in the car.
I just know when he told me the name of the movie, I didn't know... I didn't know what it was. I don't have kids myself, so I don't really follow the kid movies. And he was like, "Yeah, consider yourself lucky." But it's good though, because I obviously with four little ones, he takes these weeks, and he plays dad, and it's good. He loves it.
Interesting, you say movies too. I was just reading online that Toy Story was it 3 was the top grossing movie of 2010.
Really?
I love that. I haven't seen that one yet.
Is that one of those Pixar ones, right?
Yeah.
Those are like all the thing now.
They're great.
Yeah.
Did you see the first and second Toy Story?
I did.
Aren't they great?
I did.
I think they're great for kids, adults,
seniors. And then I went to law school and I literally didn't see a movie for like 4 years. And now my husband and I just can't catch up. We'll be like, "Oh, did you see that, Dark Knight or whatever?" And people will be like, "Yeah, that came out in 2007. It's kind of sad, but.
Well, I guess figures on movies themselves, on people going to the movies this year was down from last year. But I think, you've got the Netflix thing going on now.
We were just talking about that, too. And they keep one-upping each other. Like you had the Netflix and then the Redbox, which I know a lot of my friends are suddenly getting into.
Redbox.
And I don't know, maybe that's just a Central Mass thing, but that's where, like at grocery stores or whatever, it actually looks like a big vending machine, and you go online and you pick your location and you secure your movie, and then you show up and swipe your credit card and the movie spits out. So you basically can go there in the middle of the night and just like grab, and it's a buck a night, which is why it's like all the rage now. But Brennan was just telling me that Netflix is now, I guess that you can get it through the Wii. You can just pick movies now through your Wii console.
We're not going to be able to leave our house.
They just keep one-upping each other, So you think you've got like the newest thing, and then someone else comes in and you're like, "Oh, I got to do that now." But
we'll be Skyping and making our own movies and sending those all over the place.
I've had the same.
Sorry, Netflix is on the Wii. It's on pretty much every gaming system. You can download a little application and just stream it through whatever you got.
Well, we haven't upgraded since the PlayStation 2, so we're probably a little out of date in my household.
Hey, look, you guys, I'm still playing Pac-Man, okay? So just leave me out of it, all right? I'm one of those 80s people that's just totally, I don't have Wii, I don't have Netflix, so hopefully in 2011 I'll catch up with all of you all.
That's right.
We'll see. But interesting, okay. I like to Redbox.
Redbox.
I'll have to check that out.
Yep.
Once again, it's Linda Camuso, and she is from Estate Preservation Law Office. We're talking about wills today. So where did we leave off?
So we were talking about, obviously, a very unfortunate situation, kind of a grim topic now that I think about it for the holidays that we picked here. But,
we're also planning for the new year,
right? We are. Okay. We hear these stories, and they're scary, but we need to be empowered by them, not afraid. But we're talking about a situation where... A tragic situation where someone passes away, leaving behind minor children, and what's going to happen in that situation. So you've named the guardian in the will, and what we know now under the new law is that it's just one person, but they're doing two different pieces. You're on the guardian side. They have responsibility for the care and the custody. So the kids are going to be living with them. They're going to be overseeing, their schooling and their doctor appointments and just those typical things. And then on the conservator side, this is the person who's going to be responsible for the children's money. So presumably if the child's parent has passed away, the parent has left that child with their estate, whether they set it up through a will or whether there was no will and the child is the heir of the parent. When you have just a will, and this is why I say the notion of doing just a will has kind of become outdated, because when you have young children and you have just a will, or not even young kids, but, you know, even kids in their 20s, I mean, you know, it's a big responsibility to suddenly inherit money. And we see it with children of our clients who were in their 50s who just go crazy and just blow the money because it's found money. You didn't earn it. You know, and so you can imagine as an 18-year-old, that's, you know, you intensify that by 100. They just have no idea what to do with money. And legally, a minor can't hold an asset directly in their own name. They don't have that ability. The law does not allow them to do that, which is why they need to have a guardian or a conservator who's going to be appointed by the court to own the money for them until they turn 18. And when a parent sets up a will and says, I leave everything, you know, husband and wife, everything to each other. And then if we both pass, it goes to the kids. In that situation, if the kids are, you know, 12 and 10, the kids are inheriting that money directly. And the guardian or the conservator is going to hold that money for them until they turn 18 with the court's supervision to make sure that the money is actually being held and spent for the kids and not, you know, to spend, you know, send the guardian away on vacation or something. And then when the kids turn 18, they get that money and they walk away with the money. And that's why doing just a will is really a bad idea for parents of young kids. That's where a trust comes into play. And again, even if you don't think a trust, who are we, the Rockefellers? We don't have the kind of money for
I know
a trust.
Everybody thinks that.
But if you have a house, if you have a bank account, if you have, and a lot of people have even just, you know, simple, inexpensive term life insurance. Maybe you have a term life insurance policy. Maybe it's $50,000, $100,000, $250,000. That's a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And you don't think of that as being part of your estate or your asset because you don't spend it while you're alive. You don't even think about it.
No.
But when you pass away, that pays out. And now suddenly, say you have the $250,000 life insurance policy and the two kids are 12 and 10. The conservator gets appointed by the court to hold on to that money. Every year that conservator has to account to the court. So when we talk about being in probate and how much of a drag that is, every year the children's conservator will have to go into court and submit a financial accounting, which is basically almost like a checkbook register or a bank statement showing the money that came in, the money that was spent, and then the court has to look it over and approve it. And then when the kids turn 18, the guardian just relinquishes the funds to the kids. So the kids each walk away with $125,000, and now suddenly, you know, God knows what they're going to do with it. And that's why parents set up trust to say, okay, I'm going to have the guardian, and that's maybe, you know, my husband's sister and her husband are going to raise the kids. But then we're going to have a trust that's actually going to hold the money. And the trust is going to have a trustee, and maybe it's the same people who are raising the kids. Maybe it's someone different. Maybe there's another relative who would be a really bad child rearer, but is really good with money and would do really well managing the money for the kids. So that person's going to be the trustee of the trust, and that trust is going to be managed for the kids. And as the kids need expenses, tuition, or just money for living, clothes, vacations, as the kids get older and go to college and maybe buy a house, start a business, that money is there to be given to them as they need it. And then the trust can be structured however the parents want. If the parents like the idea that maybe when the kids turn 30, whatever hasn't been spent on them over the years just gets paid out to them, or they can pick an age. But that's a far cry from having an 18-year-old walk away with whatever assets the parent had. That's a scary situation.
Oh,
and obviously, that money is probably not going to be around for long, versus if you had just taken a couple simple steps. It's not complicated. It's not expensive. Put that document into play, and then you name the trust as the beneficiary of the life insurance instead of the kids directly, and then you don't ever have to think about it again, and you know in the back of your mind. So again, when people are scared and they say, I don't want to think about dying, I don't want to think about what would happen, you know, who would raise the kids, I don't even want to think about it. Well, you take a couple simple steps and now you don't have to worry about it, because, you know, in statistically, you know, most parents aren't going to pass when their kids are young, but it does happen. And like you were saying at the beginning of the show, And like I was saying, no one ever feels worse after doing it. They only feel better. And it's because when you hear these stories and these, that's why I said, you know, these stories are interesting because it's not just about the people who have died. It's about the people who are alive, who are doing the planning to learn from it and to say, okay, if that's the alternative, I better go find myself an attorney and do a trust.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause you know what? In the end, nobody's going to be taking care of your business. You have to take care of business.
That's right. You know? That's right.
You really do.
And if you stop and think about all the balls you have up in the air right now, you know, people who run businesses, who have a payroll to make, people who, you know, have business transactions going on or just the different things that we have going on in life. And if you suddenly just took yourself out of the equation, what happens at that point? And that's what people are left with. So when you've, you know, you can't plan for everything, but when you've gotten your ducks in a row while you're alive, it's going to be a lot easier on the other side.
Okay. And you know what? When we come back, of course, Linda, let's talk a little bit about someone who passes away who has a lot of debt. That's
a good
one, isn't
it? That is, especially these days.
We'll be back. You're listening to the Money Matters Radio Network.
Hear that? That's the sound of safety and the sound of your family's belongings staying where they belong. In times like these, it's important to know how to protect your home, your family, and your valuables. A good strong lock on a solid door and frame can make a huge difference. Most burglars will spend no longer than a minute trying to break in. That's only as long as this radio announcement. Remember to lock your doors and windows. Even the best locks can't protect you unless you use them. Install bright outdoor lighting. If you have an alarm system, use it, and post signs that say your home has an alarm. Trim bushes and trees so your house is clearly visible to your neighbors and your street. If you ever return home to find that someone is broken in, do not enter. Call the police immediately. To learn more on how to keep your home and family safe, visit ncpc.org. That's ncpc.org. Let's all work together to keep our homes safe and sound. A message from the U.S. Department of Justice, National Crime Prevention Council, and the Ad Council.
And now for the bonus round. Pandora has a box. What does Fred have?
Change for a 20.
Correct. Cat got your tongue. Who's got your back?
Detective Flanagan.
Correct.
All right.
What's the newest way Netflix delivers movies?
That's easy. Instantly. Right to your TV.
Correct. Yeah! Netflix now delivers movies two ways. Instantly to your TV, plus DVDs by mail. Rent as many TV episodes and movies as you want for only $9 a month. Netflix.
See terms of use.
Yellow Book presents Quick Make a Decision Now, where people are asked to make snap decisions in emergency-like situations. Today's contestant is Bob, a small business owner looking to promote his business.
Hello.
We've placed him in a leaky boat in a tank with toxic chemicals.
Yeah, I'm sinking.
He has 10 seconds to answer the question. What's the best way to find customers for your business? A, put one of those annoying inflatable people thingies that shake their stupid arms in front of your business. Or B, advertise in Yellow Book.
This thing is really sinking.
Then you really should make a decision now, Bob.
Okay, Yellow Book. I'm going to choose Yellow Book, obviously. It's a Yellow Book commercial. Would you get me out of this thing?
Correct. Yellow Book can help you reach customers online, on their mobile, or in the book. Yellowbook.com has ratings and reviews, video ads, and more. And WebReach, Yellow Book search engine advertising program, places your ad across top search engines to drive visitors to your website. When your business needs help, the moment you need it, Yellow Book it. To advertise, call 1-800-YB-YELLOW or visit Yellowbook.com today. Sound good, Bob?
Ah!
Stings, doesn't it? All right, somebody fish him out of there.
The Money Matters Radio Network, your exclusive home for Joe Mangiacati, June Knight, Dennis Vaughn, and Chuck Nilasek. Boston's home for finance. The Money Matters Radio Network.
Welcome back with us, the Money Matters Radio Network, streaming live on the web at moneymattersboston.com. It's June night, afternoon edition, in studio with Linda Camuso, and she's filling in for Brendan King today from Estate Preservation Law Offices. All right, Linda, so before the break, we did tease this, and we want to know what happens to somebody who passes away that's got a whole lot of debt going on.
It's an interesting subject, and obviously I think we can all guess pretty easily that it's happening more and more because people are falling on hard times. Older people are extending their mortgages further and further. You know, I think pretty much gone are the days with this generation that's, you know, sort of transitioning away and into maybe the baby boomers, but gone are the days of people just having the house, paying it off, and then living the simple life. You know, people are very extended right now. A lot of people are going into retirement that don't have enough saved up. People are living off of credit cards and you know, equity lines and so forth. So we do see a lot of situations. And then, of course, you'll have a situation where, you know, just a person dies with a whole heck of a lot of credit card debt or something like that. So typically when that happens, and again, this is within the purview of what the executor's job is. The executor is the one who's in charge, who takes stock. The executor can't just, in my situation with the bank account, you can't just go into the bank, get the money and hand it over to the beneficiaries. There's a whole process that the executor has to go through to ascertain what are the debts and the liabilities of this estate. Did the person owe money? And one of the reasons that probate and that whole thing also, I think, gets hyped up is that creditors do have up to a year to come in and file a claim against an estate. So if you had credit card debt, or if you, someone had loaned money to you and you pass away, that person or entity or whoever you owe the money to has up to a year to come in and collect against their debt. Now, the executor's job is to figure out what's valid debt, what's not. Obviously, in a situation where you have more debt than you have assets, which happens probably more now than it used to, and this is what we call an insolvent estate, pretty self-explanatory. The estate does not have enough assets to pay its liabilities. So in that situation, there's a whole process the executor has to go through to line up all the creditors and figure out, are there any creditors that have priority? Obviously, any debt that is a secured debt, like a mortgage or a car, where there's an underlying asset that's collateral for the debt, it is going to be paid using, you know, if there's a mortgage, the house can be sold, the mortgage can be paid. If there's a car, that can be, you know, repossessed or sold and the payment made to pay off the loan. But what's trickier is when you have just what we call like general debt or unsecured debt, where it's credit cards, it's personal loans, it's business loans that were made that didn't have any collateral. Typically, the assets of the estate will be used to pay those off. And a lot of times executors will come in really nervous because they're worried about, you know, do I have any responsibility? And the good news and what people should know is that, you know, beneficiaries and executors don't have an obligation to pay the debt, certainly themselves, beyond the assets of the estate. Mm-hmm. But it's not like you can just take the money and leave the creditors high and dry. You do have to parcel all that out, and they have to get paid back before beneficiaries can get paid. But it's interesting because, again, creditors have that year, but a lot of times they, you know, particularly with credit card debt, credit cards are a huge one, and one we see all the time where someone will come in, they had, you know, $10,000 or $15,000 of credit card debt. That doesn't just get paid off when the person dies. There are steps that Visa or Discover or whoever has to go through to validate their debt so that the executor can pay it. So the first thing that they have to do is they have to go into probate court. They have to file what we call a notice of claim, which is just basically putting the estate on notice. Hey, I'm a creditor and I intend to make good on my debt. Then they have to take a second step called perfecting the claim, where they actually have to go into district court and file a suit against the estate to make known what the debt is and actually get the court to approve it. So executors should beware of just willy-nilly paying credit mm-hmm. cards and things, thinking like, oh, I'm going to be a hero and I'm going to pay all this off. You can actually get sued by the beneficiaries if you pay off a debt that has not been perfected. And I'll tell you that in most cases, I would say in the vast majority of the estates that we've dealt with, the credit card companies don't bother going through those steps because it's going to cost them more time and money than it's worth what they're going to collect, especially if you're talking about $5,000, $10,000, $15,000. You know, we've even seen them as high as $20,000 or $25,000. Now, what they'll do is they count on the ignorance of the beneficiaries and the executor, so they'll try to scare them. They'll, you know, if you don't pay this, you know, things are going to get really bad. Well, not to be crass, but what's going to happen? The decedent's credit is going to go in the toilet. Mm-hmm. I mean, who, you know, who cares? You know, it's like,
right.
We don't have to worry about that anymore. So now it's just, we obviously the executor has to do what the law tells him to do. And so if there's no steps taken to perfect, again, the credit card company is counting on the ignorance of people. So they'll send letters saying, oh, you know, we can settle 50 cents on the dollar. And sometimes you'll see families that will decide to pay it off because they feel like they have the moral obligation. Well, you know, dad did rack up that debt, so we should do that. But if you're in a situation where there's not a lot of money and the money really could be used to pay off other things, pay for the funeral, you know, if there's young kids, you know, make sure that the kids have something to, you know, kind of see them through the next few years. You know, those credit cards don't have to get paid if the companies don't take those steps. Mm-hmm. And again, a lot of times you might have a spouse who says, well, it was my husband's, you know, card and he was using it to buy stuff for the house, so I can't in all good conscience. But, you know, most people don't have that compassion for the credit card companies, you know, and, right. And I can't really blame them. So it's an interesting situation though. And again, another one that we see, which we were talking about over the break, is a situation where someone dies and someone who survives them, like maybe a parent, you know, co-signed on a mortgage for a child. And we see this a lot even with older parents, elderly parents, because kids are coming on hard times. Kids are trying to refinance. Maybe they went through a bankruptcy or a creditor problem and they have a low credit score and they need someone to co-sign with them on the mortgage. And we recently had a case very similar to this where the home, of course, by now with the market was completely underwater. There was like a $135,000 deficit on this mortgage. And so when the daughter died owning this house and the house wasn't sufficient to pay off the mortgage, guess what they did? They came looking to dad, yep, who was the co-signer on that mortgage.
Poor dad.
It, joint and several liability. They're each liable for up to 100%. And a lot of times people will kind of just cavalierly like, oh, I'm just going to co-sign. And they just see it like as a little formality to push the paperwork through. And it's like, no, you're putting yourself 100% on the line. So if you, you know, and chances are, you know, if your daughter has had these problems before, she could have them again. Or in this case, you know, unexpectedly, she could pass away and not leave enough behind to pay off her debts. And now they're coming to you.
Hmm. Amazing. Once again, we're joined by Linda Camuso. She's filling in for Brendan King of Estate Preservation Law Offices. So, Linda, we've got about four minutes left. Real quickly, explain to us how taxes come into play here.
Couple different taxes that come into play when a person passes away. Obviously, the big one, the most obvious one being income taxes. Just because you pass away, you know, the government doesn't go away. They still want to be paid. So one of the jobs of the executor is to file the person's final tax return. So you passed away in the middle of 2010. And by April of 2011, your executor has to file your tax return for 2010. And if you owned assets, if you owned, you know, investments or, you know, rental income or rental property that was tenants that were generating an income, the estate itself will have to file an income tax return for the period of time between when the person dies and when things get wrapped up and paid out to the beneficiary. So the executor will have to file a separate income tax return for the estate itself as a tax-paying entity. What's the income that's been generated that has to be reported and calculated and paid? And so that's the income tax piece. One other thing I want to note, too, on the income taxes, because we get this question a lot, is if a person inherits money, so say just a life insurance policy, you're named as a beneficiary, and that money gets paid to you, that is not taxable income to you. That is an inheritance or a gift, and you don't pay income taxes when you receive that asset. If there's any built-in tax liability, like you inherited a stock that was generating dividends, you will have to pay the tax that's generated on that, just like you would if, you know, you owned it directly. But the receipt of inherited money is not a taxable event for income tax purposes. So that's income taxes. For estate taxes, and this is one that really is confusing for people and where people don't see this coming. Brennan talked last week about the new federal estate tax law, which we know now is $5 million. It's really high. Most people say, yeah, I'm never going to get caught in that. In Massachusetts, though, we still have that $1 million threshold. And basically, it's the executor's job to take a survey of all the assets you had when you died. And that includes the death benefit on a life insurance policy, That includes, you know, your 401ks, your IRAs. Sometimes people will think, oh, if it didn't go through probate, I don't have to worry about it. But anything you owned or had any kind of beneficial interest in, sometimes even if you're named as a beneficiary of a trust, your parents set up a trust for you 20 years ago and you're the beneficiary and that money is sitting there, depending on how that's structured, that might count towards figuring out if you have that $1 million taxable estate for Massachusetts purposes. And if you do, you have to file a whole separate return called an estate tax return. And the estate tax, I know Brian's talked about this, but just to reiterate, the estate tax is a tax that is assessed on the assets that you have in total when you die. And they'll call it the death tax. So it's basically if you have a certain amount of money, part of that is being paid back to the government. And in Massachusetts, it's $1 million. And once you cross that $1 million, you're taxed back to the first dollar. So it's a threshold. Once you cross it, everything gets taxed. And they're not nearly as high of rates as they are on the federal side. But it's something that people should be aware of.
Absolutely. Well, this has been an education, as always. Some really great stuff today on today's show. I have to report back to Brendan, of course,
right,
and let him know, you know, what a great show. And Linda Camuso, once again, coming to us from Estate Preservation Law Offices. And let's run down the list again. You're located in?
Our main office is out of Worcester on Elm Street in Worcester. Lovely little residential section there. We have satellite locations in Hyannis, Braintree, and Cambridge. And, of course, as Brendan has said before, we do also travel all over
the state. Over the place.
So we're pretty much on the road quite a bit of the time.
And it's estatepreservationlaw.com.
That's right.
We want to get in touch with you. Okay, so hey, Linda, thanks again for filling in for Brendan.
Thanks very much, June, for having me.
Well,
it's always fun.
You're
happy
welcome.
New Year.
And Happy New Year. We'll see you in 2011.
All right.
And that'll do it for us, the Afternoon Edition. We'll be back tomorrow on the Money Matters Radio Network.